Listen to that sweet, crunchy bass intro.
Hey, man.
Altered State Podcast, episode 74, TJ Oshie episode. I got one in.
Party boy TJ Oshie. Grown-up TJ Oshie wears 77.
That's right. That's right.
But that party boy lifestyle, he was living in St. Louis.
Not only St. Louis, but Olympic medalist number 74.
TJ Sochi.
That's right. That's right.
Dude, how badass was that shootout?
You know, watching it was the coolest thing ever. And then when you go back and look at it, like, if I was the other guys, would you be like, what the fuck? Dude, or would you just go with it?
Oh, if you're the other guys, you're playing in the Olympics.
That's true. That's true.
And you're stoked on it.
That's true.
And I also think, I think shootouts are that's a really specific skill, man.
Oh,
like,
no doubt.
You know, like, TJ Oshie is awesome at shootouts. Not necessarily a great goal scorer.
Sure.
On the flip side of that, you've got guys like Tarasenko aren't awesome shootout guys.
Right.
Like, I mean, not bad. Right. He's got an all right record,
right.
But like, not
great. I mean, so what was
fucking
he?
Alex Steen, historically a very good shootout guy.
Yeah.
Not exactly like.
What was Oshie? Like 6 or 7 for 10 in that shootout? Something like that?
Yeah, he was something in that ballpark.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was.
Because it just kept going.
That was
going.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Man.
That was fun stuff. Fun stuff. I'm just happy I had an episode title name or an episode jersey number.
You're waiting on it.
I was.
Because you knew I was going to pounce on it.
That's why I threw it in right away. Before we get started, fucking throwing that out there.
It's okay.
I know sports, goddammit.
It's cool. I'll get Oshie again in 3 episodes. So
that's true.
Right.
I'll totally forget. So yeah, you're right. I won't remember the
Washington 77.
Even though him throwing the shirt over his head and pounding a beer through it at the parade is one of the greatest things. And he also did it at the golf tournament, too, the next week or something, I think, too. So
it's nuts that, I remember, the Blues caught some flack for how hard they raged. And it was like, did y'all see what Washington did the year before?
Right.
Like, you have fucking Ovi in the middle of a fountain and the nation's capital smashing vodka.
Yep.
And, they were having fun.
We had one 19-year-old drinking. Come on.
Right.
Come
Let on. The boys play.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So where do you feel like starting today, man? There's lots of Mandalorian stuff to chat about.
Dude,
I hear something may have happened on that show.
I can't. I fucking love Star Wars. I know last episode was Star Wars heavy, but I could talk every time about Star Wars.
Well, that's what's weird. I was thinking that too. I'm like, oh, we talk about Star Wars all the time, but it's an episodic series that's out every week. I mean,
well, and Star Wars is the best thing.
It's true. It's true.
Like, Star Wars is better. Star Wars over everything.
Star Wars was my first tattoo. I mean, if that doesn't tell you something, I don't know what it tells you, but it tells you something.
Star Wars was the entryway into sci-fi for me in a lot of ways. Like, my cousin showed
absolutely.
Me Star Wars before anything else. Yep. But I got so frustrated like I said last week, I've been off the Facebook.
Yes.
Which is good for a number of things, but what's the immediate benefactor is there's zero chances for spoilers on things.
Absolutely.
I'm getting a much fresher look on things, which I love. And Fridays.
How are you getting your news? No, I'm just kidding.
And Fridays, the girls go to school and I don't have to teach classes. So Fridays for us are, it's called asynchronous learning time.
Okay.
So it's time that the kids get to finish their work and submit it. So I have an end, it's almost like office hours.
Okay.
So I have to be on the computer for any kid to email
questions or whatever.
So I can do stuff. But it's way more loose. I'm not sitting in Zoom meetings all day.
I was going to say, you're not just sitting there at a live camera feed where someone's just watching you.
Exactly.
Waiting for it to ask a question.
Right.
Gotcha.
That
sounds creepy as fuck, but that sounds kind of neat too at the same
time. Right. Well, teaching all the lines kind of weird. It's wild. But so because of that, Friday mornings, girls are at school. I just have to have my email open. I can really dive into Mando. So it's the best.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not going to say I was shocked. What, you texted me I don't know, 8:30, 9 o'clock?
Probably.
Have you seen that yet? I'm like, I'm getting ready to. I thought I was in early, but fuck, man, you were right on top of it.
Well, I got to get up. I got to get the girls off to school. Libby leaves to drop them off at 7:45.
Okay.
And at that point, I'm already awake. I've already got my coffee.
Go for it.
So it's I'm starting those episodes at 8 a.m.
Yep.
Every Friday.
Yep.
Right? My friend Stephanie, former student of mine, we always shoot the shit. She's a big Star Wars fan. But like, you know, she's 22. So the generation gap's pretty significant.
Sure.
Get this. Loves Star Wars, has never watched the original trilogy.
Then I... No opinion. She can't have an opinion.
But it's insane.
How can you love Star Wars?
Because she grew up on it.
That's an insane statement.
All the shows, all the prequels, every cartoon, every video game. She's a big time gamer. When you think about it, there's a ton of non-original trilogy content.
I mean, just over the weekend, all three were on TNT like constantly.
I agree.
How does that not just happen?
We've had that talk, but it's not.
Fair enough. I'm sorry.
Just what it is, which I think I agree is crazy. But it comes down to her big thing is the Clone Wars TV show.
Okay.
That's her favorite thing in the world.
And she was in heaven.
And I can't, I can't hate on that, because while I was very late to Clone Wars.
Same here. Yep.
It became my quarantine safety blanket. Because like that was the thing. That's the only show that I hadn't watched that I could easily watch with my kids around.
Sure.
I've watched the entire series probably 4 times in the last 7 months.
Right.
And I watched my first episode 7 months ago. So like, but I fucking love it. It's perfect. It's wonderful. It's the richest treasure trove of Star Wars that there is. It does the best world building, the best character development. It makes the prequels awesome. But anyway, so like her and I always shoot the shit about Star Wars. Sure. Is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
And I'm sitting down. I'm outside of the Facebook world, so I'm like not at any risk for spoilers. At fucking 7:45, I get a text from her that just says, "Oh my god, I'm screaming, I'm crying. This is incredible." You shut the fuck up. How? Like, I just immediately started texting her. I was like, I am not picking up my phone for another hour.
Right.
Why would you even put those expectations on me? God damn it, Stephanie.
Now, if I do have plans, I have to cancel them.
Right.
And watch this before someone else tells me something.
Right.
Yep, I'm with you there.
Yeah, I got that text at like 7:30 in the morning.
There you go. Okay. Well, I appreciate you waiting an hour. I was up, but I appreciate you.
See, but at least all I sent you was I love Star Wars.
That's true. That's true.
I didn't like, and...
But I knew exactly what that meant.
Well, you knew it meant that the episode was awesome.
Right.
When I hear it from Stephanie, I know it meant it's a Clone Wars tie-in.
That's fair. I got
that's
you.
That's like, to me, I was going into it knowing like, all right, I already know now I'm either going to see Bo-Katan or Ahsoka.
Right.
One of those two is showing up.
Right, right.
And God, did it fucking deliver.
Really did.
And I love that Katie Sackhoff, like, I'm a huge Battlestar Galactica fan, so I'm a big fan of hers anyway.
Right.
So when she showed up as the voice of Bo-Katan in the cartoon, I was like, oh, that fucking rules. But also the fact that she's such a badass as an actress, mm-hmm. not just as a voice actress, that she could easily reprise the role and make it fit was like, that's so fucking cool.
Yeah, she's, I don't want to say slowly become, but she's like become... like the queen of sci-fi, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like
for sure.
Everybody loves her in all these different roles, and she fits so lovely. And
dude, Battlestar that launched it.
Absolutely, big time, big time.
You know, she fit as that like badass genre heroine,
mm-hmm.
and like that show really allowed her to show her chops as an actress too. You know, it was like while it is very genre, she played a super conflicted, super complex character. So it allowed her to be more of an actress than just like the badass soldier that she also was.
Right, right. Excuse me. So I forget the character's name, but you know the other female Mandalorian that showed up, right?
Was the wrestler?
That's right. I didn't know if you caught. I don't know if you knew that part yet.
I only know because I looked it up.
Okay. Okay.
Well, I looked it up.
She was going to be in that show, and then once I saw her in the previews for this week, I'm like, what the. I'm not going to give her a main part, but I didn't think she was going to be. Who knows? I had no idea. But it's kind of cool.
Well, that was the only reason I looked it up. I remember the one shot from that series that was like in the very beginning of this episode where she like had her cloak up
and
scouted him getting off the ship. That was in the trailer.
Yes.
And I remember talking to Stephanie when that trailer came out, and she said that she thought that was Sabine Wren. From Star Wars Rebels.
Right.
And then when I watched this episode and they didn't say her name and they didn't give her much to do,
right,
I was like, that would be a really, that would be a poor use of Sabine Wren.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I was like, now I have to look it up. Is it like, what was her in the credits?
Right.
And when it wasn't her name, I then clicked on the actress and I was like, oh, that's Snoop Dogg's cousin.
Snoop Dogg's cousin. That's right.
That's the Wrassler.
That's right.
Brandon will be pleased.
Once again, worlds colliding. Everybody's happy. All is right with the world.
Dude, but like, and I couldn't believe how, in my opinion at least, that was my favorite Mandalorian episode so far. For a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
I loved, like, Bo-Katan and, like, her covert showing up was awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, I've completely fallen head over heels in love with the Clone Wars over the last 6 or 7 months. And I just finished watching all the Mandalorian episodes again, like, probably 2 weeks ago. The Mandalorian episodes of the Clone Wars.
Oh, okay.
So I was, like, really feeling that character. And again, I also love Katie Sackhoff. So, like, that was awesome. And, like, the teaser for Ahsoka, also awesome. But, like, Trask, that estuary moon, yeah, that's not the type of planet we've seen in live-action Star Wars. So, like, just that, doing that, like, action heist on the sea felt very Star Wars, but also felt really new.
Yeah.
So, like, throwing the Easter eggy part of it aside, it was just, like, it was a cool scene. I wasn't in a fucking desert.
Right.
You know, I wasn't on a Star Destroyer.
Right, yeah.
But it was, like, on a new planet, and the Mon Calamari and the Quorum are back. Like,
having said that, I did love the hallway shootout. Classic Star Wars hallway shootout is fantastic.
Like, all of it, it was like, it was so Star Wars, yes, but it was also
brand new.
Right. And like,
it built more into the lore. I mean,
it created that world deeper. Yes. And like, everything that I now feel confident with Disney having all of the reins. Like, obviously they're going to continue to create Star Wars forever now. Like, I don't think there's going to be a time that Star Wars is not coming new,
right,
either
in some form.
Right. Whether it be animated series or live action series or movies,
yep,
we will be having new Star Wars forever.
Yep.
So every time I get to see a new planet, I'm immediately excited. And then I think, like, ooh, now they're going to be able to build back into this.
Sure.
Like, now they've laid the groundwork for something cool.
Yep. Yeah.
Having
said that, I still might say episode one of this season might be my favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love, you know, the tie-ins with Clone Wars and things mm-hmm. like that. But tying in Boba Fett. I mean, that's a long, long journey.
Right.
To bring that.
That was incredible.
That's an amazing.
It was magic.
It really was. And the fact that we.
It made me grin so hard.
Right. And just thinking about it still makes me smile. Yeah. Like, that's fucking amazing. A throwaway character is now what we talk about the most.
They've launched this entire thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Like,
really,
45 right. seconds of screen time
right.
of him
right.
turned into the Mandalorian.
Yes.
It created the Mandalorians. Like,
created a religion of Mandalorian. Yes.
Right.
All this stuff.
Like,
yes.
Everything was born from it.
Yep.
It's funny you say that, because I was saying the same thing. When they ended last episode teasing Ahsoka, Stephanie was like, this is next week better not be like a bullshit filler episode.
Right.
I need to see Ahsoka. Right. My childhood's on the line.
Yeah.
And I just text back, bitch, I've been waiting 45 years to see Boba Fett.
Exactly.
Don't tell me whose childhood's on the line.
Exactly.
Boba Fett is the get here, not Ahsoka. And I love Ahsoka.
Right, right. So also on the same lines, having seen, we know Ahsoka's coming. This also tells me we're probably going to get some badass lightsaber duel between Ahsoka and Moff Gideon with a darksaber.
Oh,
you got to, right?
Yep.
I mean, you got to.
Yep.
Why else would they be coming together?
For sure.
I mean, they're not going to arm wrestle for it.
Right.
So,
and I keep thinking about what we are building toward in this season.
I forget who.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, and I forget who said it last. I think what we're building to now is what we just saw is Bo-Katan becoming the leader of the Mandalorians.
Yeah.
And
well, so like, I guess when we, so last season,
and this dude felt, taking off his helmet every once in a while.
Right. We'll get to see Pedro Pascal's beautiful face.
Let that shit breathe, bro.
But so like the first season was very much about just creating the atmosphere, right? Like, I didn't watch any of that season with the expectation of it getting me to a place.
Right.
Right. It was like, it was creating the universe. It was establishing characters. And in the end, okay, now he's not under attack, but like, it just created things. So now I come into this knowing, all right, you've got 8 episodes. Now you're going to tell me a story. They'd already planted the seeds of the Darksaber, so that made sense. They'd planted the seeds of Boba Fett on the last Tatooine episode. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I know there's some plates spinning, but now we've got Bo-Katan after the Darksaber. We've got Mando trying to get the child to Jedi.
Right.
And then we've got Ahsoka fitting in there as well.
Well, my question is, at this point in this world, who are Jedi other than Ahsoka and Luke somewhere out there, right?
Not yet. Not known as a Jedi.
No.
This is after. Yeah, this is after.
So he's finding new Jedi, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever. He's searching the universe for new Jedi.
Yeah.
Or galaxy universe. I apologize.
Yeah, but you know they're not going to spend Mark Hamill money. I don't know that.
Right. I don't either. This is fucking Disney, man.
Yeah.
They're spending all the money.
Maybe that's a season 3 thing. That'd be cool.
I'm not saying it's going to happen this season by any means.
I think it would have been hinted by
But
now.
I'm just trying to figure out, like, where in the timeline, right. who could he possibly be bringing him to?
So, but if we've got... Now I can't exactly remember where I was at.
I apologize.
I'm trying to figure out where the story is going.
Oh, yes.
So now I think about, we've got 5 episodes left. What do I assume this season ends on? Does this season end on them defeating Moff Gideon? Or is that going to be drawn out another season? Does this season end on... Mando finding Ahsoka and her giving him the next step of the quest to get the child somewhere.
Right.
Because she's not the destination for the child.
Right.
But.
Or is he tasked with finding the Darksaber?
Right. So I think there's a few viable outcomes for this season. Mm-hmm. But now, like, thinking about what the next 5 episodes are going to go, it's going to be. I don't know that they want to accomplish all of that in one season.
Right.
Just because that, I feel like that opens and closes a lot of threads that you could get more blood out.
Right.
Of.
Just based on what we know as far as a Boba Fett series coming,
mm-hmm.
I feel like there has to be something, maybe not a closure with Boba Fett, but something along those, because you don't introduce him end of first episode and not do something at some point in that series other than just that.
Because
you already teased him once with the walking up.
Well, that's the thing. That tells me that genuinely might be the only bit of Boba Fett we get this season.
Until you get the new show?
Yeah, just because, like, so they drop that little taster
right
in the middle of season 1, and then they drop this hammer on you on episode 1.
Right.
But then they immediately launch into the remaining story, and now that we know a Boba Fett miniseries is happening,
right.
I wouldn't be shocked if you see nothing,
yeah.
But then the Boba Fett miniseries ends up crossing over with the Mandalorian, right. and Pedro Pascal guests and that's him getting his armor back.
I would assume at this point the Boba Fett series would be, how did he get out of the Sarlacc pit?
Right.
And how did he get to where he's at today? Right. Maybe the Boba Fett series ends with what we saw,
right.
Him turning around.
And then season three involves Boba right. Fett getting his armor right. back, and he kind of becomes a nefarious character or an anti-hero. That isn't... So then if you defeat Moff Gideon... So let's play this out then. Let's say this season ends with the... Just for shits. Mm-hmm. Let's say this season ends with the defeat of Moff Gideon.
Okay.
Bo-Katan gets the Darksaber. Goes back to Mandalore.
Okay.
So now as far as big bads go, you've got, a whole storyline of Bo-Katan trying to take Mandalore back, even though she's got the Darksaber. That's there's quite a bit of adventure involved in her just taking it back.
Right.
You've got this kind of anti-hero, don't know who the fuck Boba Fett is at this point in his life, chasing down Mando, trying to get his armor back. You've got Mando trying to decide if he wants to stay on Mandalore and be a Mandalorian, or if he wants to go back to bounty hunting and kind of being nomadic and being part of the Death Watch.
Right.
So I think that that leaves you a lot of interesting places to go in future seasons mm-hmm. that maybe...
I would another option. Defeating Moff Gideon. You could still, in the series, acquiring the Darksaber in classic Star Wars form. Moff Gideon still alive,
or
coming after it in some form down.
Even
the road.
If Moff Gideon dies, there's still the remnants of the Empire. That's true. There's other people.
There's more
around.
Hitler youth out there still.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. There's more Hitler youth out there.
Every time I see those hats. Speaking of which. I forget his name. Fucking Bosch. The show's called Bosch. He's on with the guy who was the Imperial.
I can't remember his name either. But
everything.
As soon as I saw him, I was like, I fucking know that
I
guy.
I love that they put those kind of people in this.
Yeah,
you know, even
like when they had Jason Sudeikis and Adam Pally.
Yes, they're in it for little one-off things, and you know, mm-hmm. that's how. I don't know. You know, maybe it doesn't keep people intrigued, but keeps people like me. Like, oh, I fucking love that guy. You know,
yeah.
you recognize people and it holds you in it, I think, a little
more. Well, it's just fun. It continues to remind you. I think at the end of the day, Star Wars is for kids. It just is. We fell in love with it when we were kids. And then I think it's always becomes interesting when we talk about like our generation. We want Star Wars to mature with us.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the formula, right? Star Wars has always been about hope. It's been about the good guy winning.
Right.
Star Wars is not dark or gritty.
Right.
Star Wars is the Marvel universe. The good guy fucking wins.
Right.
And it's a fairy tale. So like, I love that we get these little moments that Mandalorian is kind of that little bit of Star Wars growing up with us. It gives us a little, but it also stays true to form of being
right.
fun,
right.
of being grounded in joy and hope. And it's interesting. Like I'm sure it's always been this way, but I just am now seeing it because now I'm an adult. But I feel like in recent years, it's like, with the exception of MCU, everyone's trying to do everything so dark and so gritty and so real.
Yeah.
And then we end up with this world of cynical, fucking depressed, anxious human beings when it's like, what happened to hope? You know, like, hope is cool. Hope is fun. Hope is joyful. And and why isn't that enough? So when I watch something like Star Wars now, the parts of me that like, oh, they could have gone grittier there. They could have made that more real. I then also remember, like, no, this is grounded in hope.
It's grounded
in optimism, and the good guy fucking wins.
Right. That's why stormtroopers can't shoot.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yep.
That's why no matter how many times people die, you see blood, like, never.
Right. Barely ever. Right. Yeah. Run through with a sword, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. But I think that's why you have lightsabers.
Right.
There's no blood.
It cauterizes the wound.
Absolutely. It's science.
Of course.
I was trying to think if I had something else for Star Wars, and I'm sure I do.
I have a thing.
Oh, please go.
As we're talking about Star Wars for kids and being hopeful and fun, Tuesday we get that Lego Life Day special.
That's right. I'm excited for
fucking
that.
Fucking Tuesday.
That looked really cool.
It's going to be so much fun,
man. Looked really neat. I was really excited for that.
I cannot wait to sit on my couch with my kids and
watch that.
Just fucking watch it and giggle.
Yep.
And yeah, that will, like, next week we'll have new Mandalorian and Life Day to talk about. The Star Wars keeps coming.
It does. That's pretty sweet.
But I'm also I did look. Next week's episode is directed by Carl Weathers.
Okay.
So I feel like that's going to be the episode that Greef Karga and Cara Dune come back in.
Okay, I can see that.
The episode following is written and directed by Dave Filoni.
Yes.
That's the Ahsoka episode.
Absolutely.
Like, it's, like, yeah. I feel like Thanksgiving, like, first of all, your Thanksgiving week, day after Thanksgiving that comes out, everyone's all fat and sassy. Yep.
Mm.
And then you've got, like, full-on Filoni being Filoni. That's, in my head, I'm already building it out. We're like, all right, next week we're going to get a side mission with Greef Karga and Cara Dune, which I like.
Yeah.
Probably give us a little exposition about the Bounty Hunting Guild a little more. But then, that next week, we get that sweet, sweet Ahsoka reveal. And then it's kind of interesting. I was thinking, if Rosario Dawson is Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm. She is.
And, right.
Yeah.
And she's, if she appears here, you have to assume she appears in the Obi-Wan series.
Sure.
Maybe she appears in the Boba Fett series. And then I start thinking, during the Netflix Marvel universe that Disney at least had some oversight on, Rosario Dawson played the Night Nurse, the only through character in all of the shows. And now she could do it again. Just be the go-to through character.
She knows how to pick them.
Fuck yeah, man. Yeah,
smart moves. That way, if this show sucks, like, say, a kung fu type show with some white guy you don't know about, then maybe you don't have to stay on that show that long. You go over here to Daredevil or Punisher, and you're good to go. So, which, hey, I feel bad for that guy because he's really trying to stay in that character. No, he wants to be that character again and make it right. Like, I just don't think it's you, man. Yep. I don't think you're a bad actor. That's just not your
character. It was just a poor casting choice, and that's not on you. You auditioned for a role in the MCU, as you should have.
Fucking A right.
And you got it, so you should be stoked about it. Yep. Absolutely. But when it didn't work, you also got to know, like,
gotta know when to know hold when to fold them. Yes, my friend. Yep. Yeah, it's, I don't know. What you got to do?
Yeah. That's bold.
It is. It is. You're not going to win that battle with anybody.
No.
So, I mean, especially once, what's the new Kung Fu one that's coming out next year?
Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi. Once that comes out, Iron Fist is not, it's going to be an afterthought, you know, so I think that's the plan.
I have to think, it's the redo.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And, like, you can tell it's the redo because, like, Iron Fist is the Kung Fu character that has the most name recognition.
Sure.
So if I'm Marvel and I own all my property, that's the one I want to launch first. You know, like, I'm not doing Shang-Chi when I could do Iron Fist.
Totally.
Which is why they did Iron Fist first. But when it doesn't work, it's like, all right, we can't reboot this yet. Right. We have to, we want to make a Kung Fu hero movie, but we need to shift gears and we can't mess with Danny Rand right now.
I couldn't think of his name for some reason. Danny Rand, that's what I know. It's like the one of the only ones that wasn't the same letter for both.
Not alliteration.
Yes.
Not alliterative.
Like, I kept thinking Rand, but I'm like, Randy Rand? That's not it. That's not it.
Randy Rand?
But that would sound more like, anyways, kind of off topic, but was it 2 years the other day since Dan died?
Yep. Two years this week.
Saw that the other day. Kind of bummer. Seemed like a year.
Right.
It's because this year just kind of got to write off 2020.
Well, that's what I think about. What's weird is the amount of, and again, this is probably just me getting older, but, like, how time is organized in my head is just insane. Because you say, like, wow, that was 2 years ago that Stan died. That's nuts. But at the same time, I also think, like, I remember when Stan died, you and I texting about it. And it was like the first text we ever sent each other.
That's probably true, yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Like, we barely knew each other.
Right.
And that feels like a lifetime ago.
No shit, yeah.
So it's like, oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Now that you say that, that's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That does seem weird, yeah. Yeah, it seemed like we knew each other for a while before that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just barely. Like, we met that summer doing the golf cart.
It is the weird, the way. Like,
only talked a handful of times.
Weird way your mind categorizes things as far as.
Just how information's organized. Yep. I was like, fuck.
I had something else I wanted to get to. I think it was Star Wars related. God damn it. I should have wrote it down. It popped in my head when we were chatting. What were we chatting before I took us off topic there? Talking about Ahsoka?
Life Day. Boba Fett.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dave Filoni, sweet moves.
That's where I lost it, I think, was Filoni. I don't know. I mean, it just threw me. Anyways.
Favreau as the hero.
Yeah, I got nothing. It'll pop back in my head at some point where it's inappropriate.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, before we take a break, quick, we'll take a break, but before, Rick Moranis attacked or was arrested yesterday.
Fuck yes.
There's justice.
The world is just and good.
Yes. I thought there'd be no chance of that. And then in New York, they're never going to catch that guy or look for that dude.
But that's how much Rick Moranis matters.
That's right. Right. A Canadian.
Right.
Is taken care of in the U.S.
When Rick Moranis gets attacked, our livelihoods
get attacked. That's when the NYPD jumps to action.
Right. It's like, no, Rick Moranis is the last bastion of goodness and decency in this world.
That's right. That's right.
And you do not fucking attack that.
They should use
not
that.
Not in my town.
That's right. They should use that for like an NCIS episode or something. Like Ice-T solved that shit. You know?
Right. Anyway, you imagine Ice-T picking up the phone? Wait. Rick Moran. What the fuck? That's the cold open to NYPD Blue.
The little motherfucker from Ghostbusters? Oh, right. Hell no.
Strange Brew up in this bitch?
Strange. Yeah, he had the most random reference. Like, Ice-T would never know. But
right.
Strange Brew or some shit. Little Shop of Horrors, Rick Moranis? No way. Not in my town.
The Keymaster?
You notice I'm not even trying to do an Ice-T impression. Because right. I really don't know what Ice-T sounds like.
We don't need to go down that road.
Well, I mean, not only that.
That doesn't end well for us.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. I mean, the man was a legitimate pimp. So when he speaks, it sounds racist already.
Yeah. Ice-T is a little bit of a caricature of himself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And on that note, we'll take a quick break.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith. Check out alteredstatecomics.com right now. I will wait. But while I'm waiting, I'm going to also tell you, go check out the Altered State podcast, man. They come straight out of St. Louis, Brandon and John, and they are there for all your pop culture needs. They're very orally accented, is what I'm saying, ladies and dudes. So there you go, man. AlteredStateComics.com. It's right there in the name.
And we're back.
That was nice.
Wasn't it?
That was. So on the break, you were chatting. We were chatting. Uh-huh. You were chatting. You were just talking to yourself.
As I'm known for doing.
It happens occasionally that you've been on a little bit of a record kick.
Dude.
And they all seem to be showing up at the same time.
I can't. Well, so I'm always on a record kick.
Fair enough.
I have a problem. If it's like, so the majority of my free time, I spend going to live shows, going to club shows, usually with Gibson being stupid. Well, obviously in 2020, that just doesn't get to happen.
Not so much.
So I'm like, I then fall into like funneling my fun money that I save for that into the other things that I love. So like collecting art prints and collecting records and collecting comics. So I just keep finding shit and I just keep buying it.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah. It's a hobby. It's not a problem. It's a hobby.
A little column A, a little column B. But, yeah, man, I went through Discogs and had to, we were talking last week when I was over at your place, because you've been a Vault member longer than I have.
Third Man Records,
Third Man Records Vault. Yep. For the uninitiated.
Right, yeah.
Third Man Records, they have a subscription service.
Right.
Which,
of course, is Jack White, the White Stripes. Like, yeah. You know that, yeah.
So you get four packages a year. I have only been a member for about a year. I got my membership last fall, or I guess it would have been the spring before, because it was last fall when the Raconteurs came to St. Louis.
Okay.
I became a Vault member strictly for the pre-sale code so I could get tickets for me and Gibson to go to that show at the pageant.
Yeah.
So I've only received five packages, probably five or six.
Okay.
But you've been a member of the Vault for, what, 4 or 5 years now?
Something like that, yeah.
So whenever we're over at Brandon's house recording, always look through the collection and shit, and there's a killer Jack White acoustic 2015 record.
Yeah. Like triple album or something. Like
three or four. And it was like, it wasn't his acoustic record that was released all over the place. Like, because he had his...
Right.
Like
a whole live show. It was like a tour.
But it was it was a live show.
Is it one show or is it a collection of?
So it was five shows.
Okay.
What he did was, it was in support of that acoustic record that he released.
Right.
But what he did was, instead of a real tour, he only did five shows, but it was one show each in the five states that he had yet to perform.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. And he only went with an acoustic band
and
only like using like old tube mics and shit.
Yeah.
In Jack White weirdo fashion.
Right. Right.
But then
the smaller theaters too. So it was more,
you
know, very, very intimate, like 800 people type shows.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So I think the vinyl, I think, is the show in Alaska and maybe the show in Montana also.
Okay.
Some combination of the two, but like I had to go on Discogs and find that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
that's one of my go-tos. I mean, anytime I'm like, what do I want to listen to right now? I can put that on and I know I'm happy no matter which side, which record I put on. Golden.
Just looking at the track listing here. Yeah. So it's like a perfect career spanning bit of like enough Raconteurs, enough White Stripes, enough Jack White solo.
A Dead Weather.
Yeah.
And then you're good. Yeah. Maybe not. Probably not acoustic. I don't think there was any Dead Weather on the acoustic album. I don't believe there was. Probably not on the acoustic. No.
But yeah, I'm super stoked on that. But what I'm most excited about, weirdly, that cost me the least amount of money, being the 30, almost 33-year-old, 3 weeks from today. Because it's Gibson's birthday. Our birthdays are apart from each other exactly. So in 3 weeks, I'll be 33. Which will be a Sunday, so we'll be special recording podcast on my birthday.
That's right.
Right.
Laws permitting.
But, right. So being the 33-year-old pop punk kid that I am, mm-hmm. I grew up on Drive-Thru Records.
Yes.
Like the 99 to 2005, the only like 6 years that record label, I mean, that's the record label that gave us NFG, gave us The Starting Line, gave us Homegrown, gave us Alistair, Phoenix TX, Senses Fail, the early November, like their entire roster was just jamming. Yeah. They released some Dashboard stuff. They released a little Less Than Jake stuff. Yeah. Like they were, Drive-Thru was my gateway drug to like everything that I love.
It was my Sub Pop.
Exactly.
I got you.
That's 100% what it was. Perfect analogy. But I found a few old Drive-Thru releases on vinyl that I have never been able to find. I found Homegrown's Kings of Pop,
mm-hmm.
which is my number one springtime record and has been since it came out in fucking 2002.
Right.
Like when it is that first really nice day, I will spin that. I will put that on in my car. I'll put that on my phone. I'll put that on my iPod everywhere I'm at for at least 10 straight days.
Yeah.
It is the fucking perfect pop punk spring. Like fuck yeah, let's go. Like
yeah.
Such a fun
absolutely
album. So I found that. Alistair's Last Stop Suburbia with Somewhere Down on Fullerton and fucking Race Cars and Scratch, like awesome record. Hello Goodbye's first record, their little EP that has like Shimmy Shimmy Quarter Turn and Will You Go to Prom with is fucking great. NFG finally did a very limited reissue of their self-titled record on vinyl.
Oh, very cool.
So I got that because like I was on their mailing list. So I have that coming in a couple of weeks. So all my Drive-Thru shit's coming back.
Nice.
And
nice.
I am just going to spend this winter feeling like a kid.
So when you go looking at records or looking for records, do you start with, you know, bands you like? Do you start with albums you like? Do you start with stuff that's not available anywhere else other than vinyl or just whatever floats your boat that day?
It, oftentimes it's
like you're more whatever's of a connoisseur or just a, you know, I'm looking for some cool shit.
I'm not a connoisseur as much as I typically, if I'm not buying a new record on vinyl, I am typically only buying stuff that I already love that I've owned digitally for 20 years that, you know, that I bought the CD of at Sam Goody in the sixth grade.
Right.
But now I want it in my record collection.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do a lot of that. And then all of the bands that I love that release new vinyl, I can't not buy it.
Right.
Like it's a problem. It's impulsive.
This is why I have Uno Dos Tres on vinyl. Just right. Because
it's the same thing.
Right.
I have, so the Menzingers are one of my all time favorite bands. I have every release they've ever done on vinyl. So like I fell into them
Do you like Duke
early?
Are you a completionist when it comes to that kind of thing? Like if you have
for them,
right?
I am.
That's
now.
How I am. Like with my Pearl Jam or my 311. If I have one or two, I need to seek out the entire collection. I just feel not. I don't have to have it right now.
Uh-huh.
But if I'm starting to look, I'm looking for that kind of stuff first.
Well, that's my thing with the Menzingers is just like my buddy Mark, who's in the band Typesetter, plug for Typesetter. They're fucking awesome. Go listen to them. My buddy Mark turned me on to them years ago, like right when they released their first EP. And I got it. I got the 45 of their first EP. Mm-hmm. It was when I was in college and I had just started collecting records like in earnest. And it was like $4 because they were a nobody band, you know, like they were on Red Scare Records. So it was like $4 for this EP. Fucking sweet. Okay. So I bought it. Loved it. Then their next record came out on Red Scare. Bought it, fucking loved it. Their first four records are four of my favorite records of all time. Like, showed up at the right time. Like, me and Gibson and Fox have road tripped to see them a bunch of times. I've seen them more times, like, with the exception of NFG, they're probably the second most band I've seen. Like, okay. Last year on Halloween, I went by my fucking self to see them because they were here on Halloween. But either so like one of my favorite bands. However, their last couple of records I haven't loved.
Sure.
Well, that's not true. Like their most recent one, Hello Exile, I didn't love. The one before that, After the Party, I loved. The one before that was Rented World, also didn't love.
Yeah.
But like during quarantine, then they released an acoustic version of their new record that I didn't love the original record.
Right.
But as soon as that got the email, I was like, yeah, of course.
Right.
Because I've invested so much time and money in them over the years.
Absolutely.
And I already have the whole collection.
Right.
So it's like now I just need, I bought everything new as it came out. I like literally every record they've ever released, I bought on pre-order with the exception of that first EP.
Right.
And they're one of those bands that, like, they blew up. They became pretty big. And so then I get, like, the real music snob shitty guy. Yeah. And you're like, I was there first.
Absolutely. I know what you mean.
I saw them on Tiny Stages.
Fucking A. Right.
Pinkies out. But, like, typically when I'm looking for records, it is bands I already love. Or sometimes it's like if a friend puts me onto a band, I'll listen to one song and I'm like, yeah, I like that. Cool, I'm in. Like Hot Mulligan is a recent band.
Right.
My buddy Harry put me on early in quarantine. And like he sent me one fucking song on Spotify. And then I was like, yeah, all right, I'm buying that record. But I would say more often than not, it is, if I'm buying a vinyl, it is purchasing a record that I already love. That has been in my rotation for a long time digitally, but now it's getting released on vinyl or re-released on vinyl.
Right.
Or yeah, like almost everything in my collection is something that means a lot to me.
Sure.
Not just, this isn't just something that I like, or, you know, I have a few in there that are like, this is whatever, I can throw it on.
Right.
But I would say of that entire collection over there, 90% of it is records that mean an awful lot to me for a variety of reasons.
The problem I'm finding lately, or why I think I've kind of slowed down my collecting, is like you say, I tend to only buy records of stuff that means something or I have an appreciation for, which doesn't, new stuff doesn't happen that often, you know.
Sure.
And in the 90s, where most of my musical growing up happened, they didn't make a lot of vinyl.
Uh-huh.
And the vinyl they did, it's fucking so expensive right now.
Sure.
So I go to find, I want, I don't know, fucking Everclear, you know, or mm-hmm. whatever on vinyl. I already have it. But you know, on this blue vinyl that they made, you know, 500 copies over whatever, and it's fucking, you know, $80. You're like,
yeah.
It doesn't mean that much to me, but mm-hmm. you know, but it does. It's weird,
yep.
you know, like I don't want, I'd rather buy that than $30 for something new that I like a song off of.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I get that.
But then I'm like, do I want to play a lot of it? You know, I have a decent record player, and I have very nice needles. And I'm very specific about the needles. I won't put certain records on shitty record players. I'm a little snobby when it comes to that. But only with, like, the special records or the nicer end records.
Yeah.
You know, if I got something new, I'd throw it on there, no problem, on any record player. But, you know, if I have an original pressing of a Beatles album or something, it's getting the diamond tip needles. It's not getting it's not getting the fold out Crossley.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So so if that's snobby, then hey, fuck it, I'm snobby. But that's why I got good records still.
Right. There's a lot of my new record purchases are just bands that I love that are releasing new shit.
Yeah.
Like I have almost the entire NFG collection over there.
Exactly.
And I haven't liked their last two records.
Sure.
Yep. But like they're like there.
The new Pearl Jam record I could really care less for.
Uh-huh.
But I have every other fucking album.
I mean,
I just gotta get it to have it in the collection, right? I mean,
so let me throw this out there. Do you have any like holy grail records? Like records that you desperately want that you feel like you need in your collection but haven't been able to pull the trigger on the financial commitment to them?
There's probably a handful. I haven't really thought about it for a while, but I have like you said, my Discogs account. So I have a wish list in there. But most of them are, you know, for early pressings of something that you just can't find that was never in a store, or it's, you know, the stuff that was only released on vinyl that's very hard to find, or it's, you know, the early Third Man record stuff that I didn't get in on that no one's selling because they made 1,000 of them.
Yeah.
You know, and if you find them, it's $800 for the set, and it's, you know, one day, sure, maybe.
Yep.
But I want to pull up my account now and look through it because I know there's something in there I miss. I'm racking my brain and I can't think of anything in particular that I don't have that I'm dying to have. But I know there's at least 10 in there that if I walked into a record store and saw it, I'd be like, oh, fuck me.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that I'm blanking right now on what that is.
I've got two that I want so badly, but I will never have the type of disposable income to be able to spend. Like, they're each on Discogs right now. I could get each of them for right around $200.
Okay.
And there is no record that I will ever spend $200 for.
Okay.
Because I'll never make that kind of disposable income. But one, The Matches, who are like one of my all-time favorite bands. When they got their rights to their records back 10 years after they were released because they owned all the publishing rights. So they got the rights to their music back from Epitaph 10 years after the release date.
Okay.
And they'd only released 3 records. And they were never released on vinyl because they were a band from like 03 to 07 in that ballpark.
Okay.
So it wasn't vinyl. But as soon as they got their rights back, they, with each of their records, because they were like 2 years apart, they released 1,000 each of their albums. And the first one was like a real low key release, and I missed out on it. Yvonne Dahl Killed the Locals.
Okay.
But I 2 years later, I was right there for Decomposer, and then 2 years later, I was right there for Abandoned Hope. So I have their second two records. And they all, like, since they're out of 1,000, they're all like hand numbered, signed by the band. They'll do 2 discs. So the first disc is the actual record and the second disc is all of the demos. But I don't have Yvonne Dahl Killed the Locals. And they only pressed 1,000 of them. I can get it for like $195. And I want, and on top of want, I mean, in fairness, I love all of their record, like all 3 of them. Yvonne Dahl is probably my least favorite of the 3. I say that with a lot of love because I seriously love that record. But, like, Decomposer is... I would put Decomposer top 5 all-time records for me. Like, their second one is... I think it is the weirdest, most perfect punk rock album of all time. The way that it plays... Like, the opening track is a fucking waltz. and they're a punk rock band. Like, it's fucking weird.
Right.
And then Abandoned Hope is this really cool marriage of like punk rock and indie rock. And I love those two. And I love Yvonne Dahl. But like, if there's only one that I don't have, I'm totally okay with it being that one. And the other one, do you ever listen to The Impossibles?
I know the band, yeah.
So The Impossibles were an old Fueled by Ramen band.
Okay.
And they only existed from like 97 to 99. And I heard about them years later. Luke Reagan. It was when I started working at the pizza place. That was a record that Luke put, the CD that Luke put on all the time. And they released as a CD when they broke up. It's called, it's just Anthology. And it's like 40 songs and it's all of their work.
Right.
And it's incredible. Like, it is, when I, the first time Luke played that CD for me, I was probably 15 or 16 years old. And I fell in love with it. And that record was, like, they were pretty big in Japan.
Yeah.
So it was pressed to vinyl in Japan. Yep.
And I got a couple get like that.
That anthology. Yeah. Yeah. But again, to get it on Discogs, it's like $200.
Yeah.
Because they only, you know, they pressed it in like 2000
right.
in Japan.
Right.
So I can't imagine there's probably more than 2000 of them.
Right. There's 1500 probably.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, I was trying to pull my account up right then and there, but it's not cooperating. But the ones that pop in my head that I got, that I know were on my list for the longest time, but then I ended up getting, you said the Japanese pressing, MU330's first album press.
Oh.
I couldn't find to save my life anywhere. Japanese pressing. It was only like 1500. I found one.
Nice.
Scored that. My other big one, I had it, I have, and I had an original pressing of 10, Pearl Jam's first album.
Uh-huh.
It got a little bit scratched up, so I put it away. I found another one that I could play. So that was a, you know, when Even Flow skips, it just ruins something, man.
Yeah.
You know, so I put that one away. It's hanging on the wall. It's nice wall art, beautiful. It's an original pressing, but I had to get another one just so I could use it. Because you got, you know, I'm a toy out of the box kind of guy sometimes too, you know.
Sure. Well, and like, again, you talk about being a guy who, the 90s were your formative years. Pearl Jam was one of you, like,
right.
That's a record that means more to you.
Pearl Jam.
That
my, it's weird. My first ever record that I bought myself was Pearl Jam Vitalogy. I went to Streetside Records, midnight releasing. So it's Pearl Jam's third album.
Okay.
And it was a big gatefold. I never, you know, like, because Pearl Jam started getting big time into vinyl. They really brought me into vinyl. Because then I'm like, oh, I joined the 10 Club. Started getting a 45 all the time. Well, now I got this. I got to get their first two albums. So then I found 10, still on first edition at Vintage Vinyl. Boom, bought it. So ever since then, I had to buy everything they had.
Sure.
You know, join their 10 Club, just like Third Man Record shit. Got their 45 every Christmas and all that kind of shit. Been doing that for, well, I stopped doing that a while back, but way too long. but, you know, I still love that shit. I try to find that kind of stuff in record stores, like stuff that was only from collector's editions and stuff like that, that I know there's no way I'm going to find anywhere else.
Right.
That's like going to the same thing, going to a comic book store and you find the most random comic book ever in a bin of, you know, dollar comics.
When you're at the fucking flea market or something.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm I have a vinyl pressing of Blink's first EP, They Came to Conquer Uranus, that I found at the fucking Goodwill on Bayless.
Nice.
When I worked at the Pizza and Wings on Bayless when I was in high school, and it was in the same plaza as the Goodwill. And like, me and Gibson and Fox worked there, and we used to always go to, like, there was a dollar store in there. We'd buy a bunch of bullshit there, and we'd always go to Goodwill. And I, at the time, I wasn't a vinyl collector. I didn't have, well, I always had a record player because my mom always, my mom and dad never put away their record player. So like, growing up, my mom just always listened to her records that she had when she was a kid.
That's awesome.
So I always had access to a record player. And that was the first record that I actually bought for myself. And I just bought it because I was a Blink fan and I was like, wait, what? This exists?
Right, right. Now, I did buy that 45 of DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince from Venture when I was younger.
Right.
But the first ever full-on LP I bought was the Pearl Jam Vitalogy. So I just want to clear it up in case anybody tries to call me out on something down the road.
Right.
Speaking of which, Netflix reunion, Fresh Prince. See that?
Or,
HBO Max, they're doing a Fresh Prince reunion. They're not. No, I don't think they're doing an episode, but it's everybody's coming together and talking about everything. I saw a preview for it. They're trying to bring everything back, man.
Yeah,
I saw a preview for it the other day. Everybody looks happy and having a good time. Carlton's doing this. They brought back the mom they fired. Even like she's
really.
Yeah.
Didn't she have a bunch of beef with Will?
I thought there was something going on, but maybe they squashed it. So, yeah.
Maybe when Uncle Phil died.
I think it was more with him. But I think, you know, I don't think she's done much since, let's be honest. So
yeah.
If there's a dollar to be had, let's make that dollar.
Right.
Get
that Warner Brothers money.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, HBO Max is putting together some nice shit lately. I'm impressed.
Good for them.
I'm impressed. Yeah.
Yeah, I've continued to look more and more like
I didn't mean to cut you off records there, just popped
no,
my head.
I've been having that conversation more and more with Libby. For me, I feel like I need to do either Netflix or HBO Max. Like I don't care to do both. They're the two most expensive.
Yeah.
And I also think they're the two most niche for me. Like I only go to Netflix for a couple of things. I would only go to HBO Max for a couple of things. Disney Plus, I fucking love everything. I'm a huge Disney guy and I'm a huge Star Wars guy and a huge Marvel guy.
Yeah.
I watch Disney Plus all the time.
Yeah.
Peacock, it's like $3.50.
Right, right.
So, like, yeah, I only use it for a couple things,
yeah.
But I don't fucking mind.
Right.
You know? Like, for me, it's $3.50 a month so that I can watch the new SNL the next day.
Totally.
You know? Yeah, like, yeah. Well worth it.
I know I'm getting it as part of my package already, but I'm pretty sure you'd dig HBO Max. There's a lot of good content.
Well, I feel like I would. I mean, yeah. I would watch Watchmen once a year.
Right.
If I had it, just those 10 episodes.
Yeah.
I've heard nothing but wonderful shit about Lovecraft Country. I want to watch that.
Haven't watched it yet, yeah. We were talking, this popped in my head too. So I told you I was watching Titans.
Uh-huh.
Because it came on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. I really do. It is the best superhero series ever. No.
Uh-huh.
But it's pretty fucking casting amazing, except
right
Bruce Wayne. And he's... In the first season, he's in the peripheral, so you really don't, it's not a big deal. But the second season, he has a little bit more of a cameo heavy role. Because it really doesn't, you never see Superman, you never see Wonder Woman, you never see Alfred. All of a sudden, you see Bruce Wayne. And it's, I don't want to say the worst casting of all time, because the actor himself is fucking awesome. And I guarantee you love the actor. It's the dude, what the hell is his name? He was in, did you watch Game of Thrones?
Yes, I watched Game of Thrones.
I'm sorry, you're filling up a drink. My apologies.
I'm shouting from the distance, wondering if it's picking up.
Who was Khaleesi's like main bodyguard, the older guy who got the scaly thing towards the end?
Oh!
That's Bruce Wayne. Right? Not good. Not good. For two reasons. He doesn't look or sound the part. And he's supposed to be, in this time frame, he's still active with the Justice League. And he's old as fuck.
So this is an active Bruce Wayne.
They don't show him doing anything active by any means. He's only ever Bruce Wayne. He's never Batman, but he's only ever Bruce Wayne, and he's the skinniest Bruce Wayne you've ever seen in your life.
And it's Sir Davos?
Yes.
Or no, Sir Davos was the Onion Knight.
That's right. This was, I can't think of his name offhand. That's why I was...
The like, dirt sandy blondish...
Yeah, older guy.
Guy that was clearly in love with the Khaleesi.
Yes, yes. He plays Bruce Wayne in Titans. I don't care for it.
How's his American accent?
Shitty. It really takes you out of everything he's in.
Yeah.
It really
does. Like, thinking about him, I'm like, I can't imagine a not British accent
right
there.
Right. Yeah, he does not have a good American accent at all. Having said that, the show in and of itself, I think, is a pretty good show. They've done a nice job of this. Season two ends with him finally becoming Nightwing.
Mm.
So he's Nightwing. There's... what's the second Robin's name?
Tim.
God damn it.
Tim fucking.
Yeah. Anyways.
Jesus Christ.
So there's a second Robin.
And we want to own a comic book
store. I know, right? It'll pop up. we're drinking. It's not fair. It's not fair.
And in fairness, he was a.
Jason Todd.
He was a Robin so bad that people. Voted to kill him.
And they killed him, right. So at this point, I'm sure they're going to kill him.
Well, Todd was the third, wasn't he?
No, Jason Todd was the second, killed by the Joker in Death in the Family.
Death in the Family?
Yeah.
Who's Tim?
He was the third, I think. Someone else.
He replaced Jason Todd?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But I never read much of those books.
Me neither. That, like, that was in that mid-air. Like, to me, to most people,
right.
Dick Grayson is Robin.
Right.
And then Jason Todd, you always remember just because he became Red Hood.
Yeah.
And became a much more interesting character. Well,
and that's kind of where it looks like, without killing off Jason Todd, they might make him Red Hood, because the other Titans have kind of, you know, he's always been a dick.
Yeah.
Jason Todd was just a dick guy. He's just a young dick kid. So he's kind of on the outskirts with all of them, doesn't, you know, follow the rules and all that kind of shit. So they may convert him into a Red Hood without having the Joker kill him.
Okay.
So, you've seen in a couple cool, like, Dick Grayson gets poisoned scenes. You know, he's going through different memories in his head. So there's like you don't ever see the huge villains, but you see either shadows or, like, there's a scene with Joker face first, like, after falling off a building in hoofed in a car. You know what I mean? Like,
oh.
But you just see the back of his suit and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Or, you know, you see the coin for
Two-Face
and stuff like that. So, you know, they do a nice job of interweaving it. But at the same time, if you're making that move that you're going to be on HBO Max, you got to put some money into the show.
Right.
But
I think they will.
I hope so.
And I, like, I want,
because
to
they kind of made it all
things.
Canon with Crisis, because they took place, they were in Crisis of Infinite Earth with Flash.
Well, and I also think they need to, because of what Disney Plus is doing.
Sure.
You know, like, I think, you know, we haven't seen a Marvel show yet,
right,
because of COVID, but, like, eventually that's gonna pass,
right?
Or our TV production will work around either way. Whatever happens,
right,
it's going to change.
Right.
And I think episodic TV is the future for comic book adaptations. It lends itself better to the source material.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll always see the blockbusters, but I think we will see fewer of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll see more, like, character-based stuff done on those series, and then they'll translate into the movies,
right,
and like, I think they'll play together more.
I think you'll see the big team ups in the movies,
right?
You know what I mean? The big conclusions of the story arcs,
right?
Here's this, yeah.
And I think because Disney Plus exists and they've already set in motion, like, and going back to Star Wars, I think we see very few Star Wars movies moving forward.
I would agree,
but I think we'll see one or two Star Wars series every fucking year forever.
Oh, absolutely.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Marvel gets in that place of, it's like, instead of four movies a year, it's a movie a year, maybe two, and two or three miniseries.
Right.
And I think if you're DC and you're Warner Brothers and you have your own platform now and you want to get $15 a month from people, and you've got, you know, if they're willing to put that money into HBO shows, then why... This is the extension of that, you know.
Sure.
And I think with them doing that Gotham PD show and bringing over the stuff from the DCU app, like, I think...
Swamp Thing.
Is Swamp Thing going to... Well, Swamp Thing's on CW.
Oh, that's right. It is on CW now. That's right.
And I don't know if they'll end up getting a second season. But that's the thing. I think they made that choice because Swamp Thing, if they renew for a second season... They'll renew it for a CW second season at a lower budget, like the rest of that shit. And they'll
just
cut out the few curse words they use.
Right, right.
Whereas, like, Doom Patrol is super curse heavy and, like, has to be HBO Max.
Right.
Titans could become, like, with a proper budget, could become a really badass, like, gritty show in that world.
Yep.
And that's what DC's trying to do with all of its grittiness.
And it is now, but, like, it could be much more, I don't want to say violent, but, you know, it's very dark. And, like, in those flashback scenes when Dick Grayson's poisoned, you know, he has to... sounds dumb saying it, but, you know, the evil in him comes out, and in his mind, he kills Batman, and it's a pretty fucking cool scene. Batman's laying under rubble, and Dick Grayson just puts his foot on his throat and cracks his neck. Pretty hardcore.
Yikes.
And, you know, and this is the same show that you know, their original preview
was him saying fuck Batman.
So yeah, so they cuss up a lot in this one.
Yeah,
they have Hawk and Dove in this, and Hawk is alcoholic, drug addict, trying to recover, but takes a lot of steps back here and there. So it's very real. You know what I mean? It doesn't really. It's not your typical super. It's not. I mean, it's grittier than, say, Arrow, which at the time was pretty dark. I mean, they didn't cuss or anything because it's also still CW. But
for a comic book show, it's pretty fucking dark, man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially when you juxtapose it with The Flash, that was, like, really fun.
But that's what it's supposed to be.
For sure.
You know what I mean? So.
And Flash was a 10 times better show, I would argue.
I don't know. I still love me some Stephen Amell.
I have no beef with Stephen Amell. And I have no beef with Arrow. I think Arrow was a good show.
Yeah, those first few seasons are some of my favorite superheroes.
Right. My only issue with Arrow is just how... you could tell when they jumped the shark.
That's fair.
Like, the first few seasons were good, and then it immediately kind of shifted in tone. It was like... Well, I feel like they had to continue to go bigger and badder, and it's like, you can't with that character. Right.
The problem, I think... Arrow ran into was, first, it doesn't get enough credit for kind of
launching that universe,
kickstarting everything again as far as that goes. You know what I mean? It really did. And then, you know, it took a couple more years for everything to kind of catch on and it to become more pop culture-y. And then it was kind of ran its course. You know, it was 5 seasons in.
Exactly.
And then next thing you know, they're throwing a shitload of money at it. So it's bigger production, bigger this.
That's fair.
But it was just bigger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was the same stories, it was the same whatever. Now it just took place with the Legends of Tomorrow on a spaceship sometimes. Right. And, you know, shit like that got blown out of proportion. So.
That's very fair.
But Stephen Amell as the Arrow. Whew.
He's a hunk.
What I've
Him doing that salmon ladder?
Yeah, from what I've read, it's looking like Charlie Hunnam might be the next Arrow from Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, no shit.
Which I can dig if he can do a decent accent, which I've heard him do pretty good American accents. I still love Stephen Amell, man.
Speaking of him, I read an interesting thing.
He's also trying to be a wrestler.
Oh, is he?
Yes. He's wrestling.
Oh, Stephen Amell. I thought you were saying Charlie Hunnam for a minute.
Oh, no. Well, I'd watch that too.
Completely off topic, but I read an interview the other day that was funny. And Charlie Hunnam was in it. I can't believe that this is actually coming up out of having read it. So did you ever watch Undeclared?
Sure. Not religiously, but yeah.
Yeah. So it was fun. Yeah. Had an Adam Sandler episode.
Right. Yeah.
But Charlie Hunnam was in it. It was a Judd Apatow show that he did right after Freaks and Geeks.
Right.
And it had Jason Segel and Charlie Hunnam and like that Judd Apatow crew. I think Jay Baruchel was in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was.
And it was basically what that whole crew did. Seth Rogen was in it. It was what they all did right before they jumped to cinema.
Right.
So it's like early / mid 2000s. And Charlie Hunnam was a comedic, like they were all college kids and Charlie Hunnam was a ladies man. Well, coming out of that, when Jason Segel wrote Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he wrote the Aldous Snow part for Charlie Hunnam.
Oh no shit.
And he called him up and like, cause it was Judd Apatow behind it was like getting the band back together. And at the time, I can't remember if it was like the very beginning of Sons of Anarchy or Sons of Anarchy was about to launch. It was in that ballpark.
Sure.
And Charlie Hunnam was like, I'm going a different direction with my career. I'm kind of out of comedy. And apparently they like created a big rift in that whole community.
Oh, yeah.
But it fucking launched Russell Brand's career.
Yeah.
Sorry
or not sorry. I'm not sure.
But it's got, and in the interview, Charlie Hunnam was even like, and in watching that movie, I felt incredibly grateful that I passed on it because clearly the right person got the role.
Yeah.
Because
he was not going to make that character that.
Right. Yeah. He was like, and you could also tell that like Russell Brand's kind of a one trick pony because that launched his career.
And that's all he does.
That also immediately fell apart because it was like, he was awesome in that and he was awesome in Get Him to the Greek.
Right.
And then he did like 10 other things that all sucked.
Right. It's funny in that movie, you can almost really see, I don't want to say the world, because I think England still loves Russell Brand. America's, infatuation with him, you know, love it, love it, love it. And then at the end, even when Sarah Marshall's like, bullshit, 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 like that's the way like America looks at him now. It's just the same noise.
Yeah.
Like Ricky Gervais almost. I mean, maybe not. Ricky Gervais is a little more complex and better joke teller.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
Ricky Gervais is a better writer.
He's a much better writer. Much better writer.
Like, what anyone can say whatever they think about Ricky Gervais' stand-up, and, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion about that, but there is no denying. The dude is a very good writer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And he's a very smart guy. Yeah. Yeah. His stand-up may not be your cup of tea.
Right.
I say that as someone whose stand-up's not my cup of tea. Right. I don't particularly care for his stand-up.
I don't care for tea.
I love tea.
Green tea.
But
here and there. Yeah, Russell Brand is...
But Forgetting Sarah Marshall is a fucking dynamite movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love that fucking movie. Yeah. But it was funny that you brought up Charlie Hunnam because I was like, oh, I've actually thought of that name recently.
Everybody thinks always, I mean, I do too, you know, Sons of Anarchy. He's fantastic in it, but Green Street Hooligans is still one of my favorite movies. And that's just, what a cool role.
It's weird because I think Green Street and I think Undeclared. Because I have never watched an episode of Sons of Anarchy.
Really? Yeah.
That's just not my, it's not my jam.
I didn't think it would be mine either, but I dig it. I really do. I'm not a biker guy by any means. It doesn't, right. It's not my thing.
Well, I think with any show that runs that long and has that kind of success, it is clearly telling a story that's bigger than just bikers.
Sure, yeah.
So I am certain that there's things in there for me.
I mean, when you take a step back and look at just the cast,
mm-hmm.
Charlie Hunnam, Ron Perlman,
Katie Sagal,
what the fuck's the Irish guy with the scar? You know, I can't think of his name. He's been in everything. Jesus Christ. He's in Braveheart. He's in everything. You know what I'm talking about. I can't think of his name. But the cast, and then they always had lots of random, you know, special appearances and cameos and, mm-hmm. you know, continuing appearance type people. They did a great job casting that whole thing, man. It's a good show. It's a good show.
Well, I 100% believe that. And like, I would never, I'm not like avoiding Sons of Anarchy.
Right.
But again, it kind of comes down to
Tommy
me.
Tommy Flanagan.
Of like,
sorry.
Okay.
Can't think of his name.
It comes down to me again of like, there being so much good content and so much of it telling good, strong stories that for me, it's like, and especially like, and I know I've probably said it to death and people will be sick of hearing, but with my kids at their age, I have less time that I can sit down. Right. I have less time that I can sit down and like watch TV.
Right.
That like when I invest in something, it's like, it's gotta be telling a good story, but also the ancillary shit has got to be kind of in my wheelhouse too, kind of sci-fi, kind of fantasy, or something nostalgic from my youth in that ballpark for me to glom onto it at this moment in my life.
That's fair.
So I know there's a lot of good shit that I miss out on because of that. And I also know that in 10 years when my kids just want to... It's really funny because I was about to say, because in 10 years, my kids will be 14. I want to be like, yeah, in 10 years when my kids like want to go to the roller rink or the arcade or the movie theater, I'll be watching. And I was like, oh, no, that's what I did at 14.
Right.
And 10 years when my kids want to ride their hoverboards to space ping pong.
Right.
Then I'll watch cool shows again.
That's right.
But like, I just accept that I'm kind of at the place where I'm going to miss out on some cool shit because I'm going to watch Swamp Thing.
Right.
Because it's also going to tell a cool story, but it's also going to play with a character that I really like from my youth.
Right.
And it's going to involve sci-fi, fantasy, fucking sciency shit that I'm into as well.
One last thing I want to end on.
Okay.
We want to end on. This might take us a while. Nah, it probably won't take us a while. We're always talking reboots, and I shit on a lot of reboots here and there, whatever. Uh-huh. One reboot that was announced this week. Never saw it coming, but I'm going to go see the motherfucker, and you're going to make fun of me constantly. The Scorpion King is getting rebooted.
The fuck they are.
The Rock owns the rights. His studio is producing it, and he's going to cameo in it. The film that broke him to the world.
The fuck out of here.
It will take place in modern times.
The direct-to-DVD fourth sequel of The Mummy starring Brendan Fraser.
The original Scorpion
King. Is that what you're going to tell me?
With The Rock. I loved it.
Of course you did, because you love The Rock.
The Rock with a ponytail.
Sure, but you're not going to tell me that was a good movie. You're going to tell me you loved it because you love The Rock and it was cool to see him in a movie.
I enjoyed that movie.
And that's okay. It's okay to love it because you love the actor, but that's why.
I don't think it is.
A good fucking movie.
It's a pretty good movie. It's fun. Did you like the Mummy movies?
No.
Oh, well, then you wouldn't like this.
I know. I didn't.
I enjoyed them. I loved them.
I say that as someone who's fucking seen them all.
That's fair. I like the first two.
Because I love Brendan Fraser. I am unapologetically a Brendan Fraser fan and have been even when people were shitting on him.
How could you not be?
So I watched the Mummy movies because I like that fucking actor. And when I still see him on TNT and I stop for a minute, it's because I fucking love Brendan Fraser. And I think it's a goddamn travesty that he has been raked through the mud the way he has been. Because I genuinely love his work.
I think he's great on Doom Patrol.
Fuck yeah, he's awesome on Doom Patrol.
Very funny.
I challenge anyone that shits on Brendan Fraser to watch the... It's either two or three episodes of Scrubs that he guested on.
Watch Encino Man, and how dare you shit on that.
I'm saying.
He says one thing, and it's Wheeze the Juice, and you love him for the entire...
Right.
Well, were
you a Scrubs guy?
Here and there.
So I love...
That was like when I was raising a child kind of time, so I didn't catch a lot of it.
Yeah, you're in that... Yeah. Well, I have some Scrubs pops up there. I'm a huge, huge Scrubs fan. It is in my top five sitcoms, probably. Definitely top 10, maybe even top 3 if I really push it.
Okay.
It could be that. I love that show. But Dr. Cox, who's like the asshole doctor all the time, has this very tumultuous relationship with his wife, who was his ex-wife, and then they got married again. It was a whole thing. Brendan Fraser plays his wife, ex-wife, Jordan's brother.
Okay.
And he like pops in after their son is born. He pops in an early, like a season before, where he's diagnosed with cancer.
Okay.
And then like a season later pops back up around the time of their son's first birthday.
Okay.
And he pops up and he's like a traveling photographer and shit. And he's Brendan Fraser. He's charming. He's funny. He's a total fucking gag the whole time. Like just like making jokes like crazy. And so the whole episode, and I'm going to say spoilers here if you haven't watched it. But the moratorium has passed. This episode came out in like 2003. So this whole time it's gearing up. Like everyone's talking about the kid's first birthday.
Okay.
You're seeing the whole episode from Dr. Cox's point of view. He's the narrative device of this episode, which is one thing that I love about Scrubs is they shift that from episode to episode. Okay. Like JD's the main character, but there's different storytellers out.
Right.
But anyway, so this one is told from Dr. Cox's perspective. And so like he's gearing up for his son's first birthday and his fucking brother-in-law, who's also like his best buddy, is around there fucking around and they're joking. And he's like giving him shit for trying out like this new experimental medicine, this like fucking, you know, like Eastern religion, this type of medicine that especially in 2003 was like fucking voodoo or whatever. And then you get to the end where they're like walking up to the party and like the whole time, every person that Cox interacts with, he's a total asshole too. And they're like, it's just you don't notice it until you go back and rewatch it, because it's written so fucking well.
Right.
But then when he walks up to the birthday party, the camera turns and he's walking up to Brendan Fraser's tombstone. It's his funeral.
Oh, fuck.
He died of cancer, and the whole time he's interacting with like his mental image of that character, and it is. I've seen that episode probably 15 times in my life, and it still makes me cry. Like, it is beautifully told. It is fucking gorgeous. Yeah. It is like this machismo character dealing with the loss and the pain of losing your best friend in a way that's told so powerfully that any human that has a best friend can relate to.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, like, you, the instant you watch it the second time, it's not Brendan Fraser and Perry Cox. It is you and your best friend. And it is everything about, like, it is gorgeously written. It is, and like, I challenge anybody that fucks with Brendan Fraser. That shit's on Hulu. Go spend 22 and a half minutes. That's all you got to do. Watch that fucking episode.
You got nothing else to do.
I will even, I'm going to look it up right now and tell you which season and which fucking episode to go watch.
I remember it was right. It was the very beginning of, or maybe the beginning. Scrubs may have been around for a little while. I can't remember exactly how long it's been out. But I used to confuse Scrubs with, I watched the shit out of it. I still do. Adult Swim.
You know,
Love Me, Robot Chicken. I loved Moral Oral. And if you ever saw Moral Oral.
Yeah.
Great show. But there was also Children's Hospital.
Oh, that was way after Scrubs.
Was it though?
See, I don't remember.
And I would.
I bet Children's Hospital. The shit out of that. I bet Children's Hospital launched in 2010.
Maybe.
Scrubs launched in like 2002.
Maybe.
But
I would always, people would talk about Scrubs, and I'd start talking like I knew what I was talking about, and I'm talking about Children's Hospital.
So, for those of you that are going to go spend your 22 and a half minutes on Hulu, season 3, episode 14, it is titled My Screw Up. It was released February 24th, 2004, and it is beautiful. And I challenge you. To go watch that shit.
The Gauntlet. Because
it's so fucking good.
That's right. The Gauntlet's been thrown down.
Right.
Challenge you. Brendan Fraser moments.
It is 22 minutes. That's it. It's an old school fucking network sitcom.
It's like, I always feel weird when I recommend movies like that. Like, I love, you know, Field of Dreams and stuff like that, you know, but like, you're going to cry.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Like, you got to watch this. It's going to upset the fuck out of you.
Right.
You'll never be the same.
It's going to break your fucking heart.
It's going to ruin your afternoon. Go watch this. It's right. The best. It's the best. But we do.
And oh, absolutely.
It's part of it, I guess. So,
like I said, that shit came out 16 years ago. Longer. And it haunts me still. Yeah. Because it is beautiful. But it doesn't haunt me in like a... It doesn't rip my heart out in like such a sadness. Because it really... It's just beautifully told. And I am just... I am genuinely, you know... My friends who've been my friends for a lot of years will be the first people to make fun of me because I cry easy. I just do. I'm a soft guy. I am. It's the way it is.
Yeah.
But
every group needs like, a softie.
Good fucking storytelling absolutely touch it. Like, I am susceptible to that shit. I am open to, and like, that.
You mushy artist.
I am, dude. I am I am soft as fuck. But like that shit in a 22-minute sitcom that you will probably all watch, and I'll get a bunch of like Twitter messages like, that was a fucking fine episode, right. You prick.
Right.
But it is beautifully told.
It's all about time and place too.
Yeah, man.
So, I got nothing else today, man. You?
Yeah, no, I'm good.
All right.
We're clear.
Let's go have some fun.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.